Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hello, D-Aliens. This is Miraz, your executive producer of the DA Show. Yeah, I'm going to say sidekick on the DA Show. And we all know the king of all work ethic. This right here, this is the best of today's DA Show. Listen up.
The big news of the weekend has been surrounding the Washington football nickname. Should there be a name change? Will there be a name change? Look, I think that those are two different questions. Should there and will there? Here's what I would say first and foremost. My belief is there will be. Okay, let's just start there. To me, it feels inevitable right now that Washington will change its team name. I think where you look is financial pressure, and there is financial pressure for Dan Snyder to change the team name. Clearly, this has been a summer of discontent. There's been a lot of businesses saying we need to remove this part of our catalog, lineage, wording, what have you, about a lot of things racially. And so this is just the next. So to me, seeing the financial pressure on the franchise and Dan Snyder tells me it will change. And now we go into, should it change? If you've been closely following the DA Show, you may have noticed I don't use that term. Haven't used that term in probably 3 or 4 years. The last turn around when this was in the news cycle, I believe that was 2016, and there was more discussion about it. I looked into it, and I thought about it, and I spoke with a Native American that I know closely, and I said, do you find this term offensive? What do you think about this? What does your community think about this? And the feedback I got was, there's no place for it anymore. The times have changed. It is hurtful that the team name was used years ago as a derogatory team name. And that when I asked somebody that I was close to and when I thought about it myself, I said, yeah, you know what? I agree with that. And I don't think it's got a place anymore. So personally, I never made a whole parade out of this. But personally, for me, I said, you know, for me, I'm not going to do it anymore. We'll call them Washington. We'll call them Washington on the show. And if you call them their team name, you certainly don't get banned from the show. Many of our insiders and analysts, what have you, would have used that team name. I just decided as a personal choice not to. And I think if you've been listening to this show since 2016, when I'm talking about a franchise that won 3 Super Bowls under Joe Gibbs, all I have to say is Washington, and you know exactly who I'm talking about. When I talk about Dwayne Haskins, you know who I'm talking about. So I don't think we lost much in that little transaction personally for me. But of this time now, do I think it should change? Well, of course, if I thought it should change 4 years ago, I think it should change now. I also think that there is better information that we have now about this decision, about this choice. And as I said, I think it's inevitable. And I've got a couple of reasons why. It is where we begin, your cold open.
I think it's all about the moment and the timing. But, you know, I'm just somebody that's from a different era, that when football wasn't such a big part of the political scene, you know, that's one of the tough things for me, too, is I've always wanted to try to keep that separate. You know, people have wanted me to get involved in politics, you know, while I was coaching. And I kept telling them, you know, it's not for me to get up here and influence people. You know, I have my beliefs. I know what I think. You know, I support the movements. You know, I support the players. I believe in what they're doing. And, again, you know, I think that there are certain elements and certain things that, that's all about the timing and the best time to discuss those things.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, Mark Grundy!
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes!
It's your cold open.
So that was Ron Rivera, and he joined 670 The Score in Chicago, our CBS Sports Radio affiliate there. And, you know, he kind of resisted the idea that they should have to change the name. But then, just a couple of days later, after that interview, says it would be awesome if the team changed its name before this upcoming season. So even Ron Rivera has had two different kinds of takes on the matter in just the span of a couple of days. And for me, when I see stories like minority investors in the football team want to sell because of the team name and have wanted to sell because of the team name and have asked Dan Snyder to sell. And when Nike gets involved and says, we're not selling your merch anymore. When FedEx, whose business name is on the stadium, says you need to change the name. These are the external forces, the external pressures that will ultimately get it done. Because at the end of the day, what Dan Snyder proved was he was not going to relent because of what ethically somebody thought, morally somebody thought. He had his own ethics and morals. But Dan Snyder has always been a capitalist. Dan Snyder's always been about the money. Dan Snyder buys the team based on his own financial windfall from his advertising company and his millions, hundreds of millions. And so these are the types of things that billionaires actually listen to. If you go and tell them what they should do out of ethics or morality, they're going to laugh in your face. They've made a lot of money doing their own ethics for a long time. But once you start taking away their money, well, that's when billionaires start listening. And so that's why I think it's inevitable that it will change, because this has now gone from, well, you should do it because it's the right thing to do, to you should do it because businesses are taking money out of your pocket. That's when things actually really wholeheartedly change. So that's why I think this is inevitable right now. Here's your phone number, 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227 on Twitter, DA on CBS. And let me just also set up the conversation this way as well. And just take a moment, take a breath. If you are a old school NFL fan and you remember that team name and you remember their Hail to the Victors theme song, and that it has always been entrenched in sports lore, and the way you view it is, you know what? It's not derogatory. This is a proud nickname, and it's always been this way. And suddenly we're being so PC about everything, and why does this have to change as well? Part of the mob, okay? And I'm sure there's plenty of you that are listening right now that may feel that way. And let me just counter with this, if you could just take a moment and think about this. I hear a lot of people that would prefer Chief Wahoo to remain the logo in Cleveland, or Washington to keep its team name, or the Indians to keep its team name, and on and on. And the Tomahawk Chop at Arrowhead and at Braves games. And what I feel is that most of the people that don't want it changed don't want to change because of their own personal comfort, that this is what they've grown up doing. It's fun. It's cool. It's the way it's always been. And when you start changing things from the way that they've always been, people feel really uncomfortable. This is the way that it's always been, and now we're going to change it? What, the Washington Red Tails, the Washington Warriors? That doesn't make me feel like I'm watching John Riggins. That doesn't feel like watching Joe Theismann. That doesn't feel like watching Mark Rippon. That doesn't feel like watching the team that I grew up watching. That does not feel like what I want to feel like. I want to be taken right back to where it was, and I want that to feel the same way it's always felt. And the fact that we have COVID and the fact that we have all of these different pressures on our society, I'd rather feel comfortable right now because, hey, there's not a lot that makes me feel comfortable anymore. And I understand that. That's a human condition. But I do think you have to look outside of yourself. And I will bring up a poll. And there's been a number of polls over the years that seem to have supported the idea that Native Americans largely, by and large, are not offended by this nickname. But let me bring you a recent study from the Journal of Social, Psychological, and Personality Science. Okay? This was one of the most recent polls. And this was from 1,000 Americans that deeply identify with being a Native American or are deeply involved in tribal cultures and the histories of our Native American people here in the States. And from this group, 67% of them who frequently engage in tribal cultural practices, 67%, were found to be deeply insulted by caricatures of Native American culture and considered the Washington football team name as one of those. 67%. Now, for a lot of us that do not identify as Native Americans, we might not look at it as derogatory. We might not think of it as derogatory. We think of it as a proud team name. But if those that actually identify with Native Americans are the ones saying, yeah, no, it hurts, then we should listen. Because that's what really matters. We should listen. And I think through the years, this whole message has gotten kind of gobbledygook. And it was always so, in my estimation, so avoidable. Dan Snyder did something where the fight to keep the team name was simply about his comfort. It wasn't about doing what was right. It was about his comfort. I wanted to stay. I own the team. It's going to stay. And this was avoidable because Dan Snyder could have, the day that he bought the franchise, said, I love the team name. It's a historical part of this franchise. It's meant to be proud. And I am going to support indigenous culture. I am going to support Native American culture. I make $4 billion a year owning this team. I am going to put this money, or some of this money, to help out reservations, lack of infrastructure in Native American communities, lack of education, lack of health care. Our Native American communities are some of our most dire communities. And if Dan Snyder ever showed that, you know what, they meant something to him besides him just being comfortable with the team name and liking it and getting a logo out of it and merch out of it, it could have changed the narrative. But Dan Snyder fought this not because out of any other reason than he liked it, he wanted it, and he wasn't going to go down by letting somebody else tell him what to do. And that to me always felt like it was missing the point. That you could use this team name for good, but you refused to for years. You could. You got this platform. You have all of this money. You have all of these ways to mobilize anything that you want to mobilize, and you just refuse to do it. And yeah, there was a nominal way to do it a couple of years ago where he basically did it just to get people off of his back. But he never truly embraced that idea because, hey, it's my team. I like it, and I'm not changing it. And that's where you have to change from. If that franchise used this team name for the greater good and said, we will do all of these things that our Native American people are lacking. We will use our platform for good and our money machine for good. You know, you could actually have a reasonable conversation about this. But when you do it just because, you know what, I own the team and I don't care, and you're a white guy that owns the team and you don't care, then it really comes off as tone deaf. And that's where I think this has to change, is because the only reason that the name has stood for this long is not because it was the right thing to do or even that they were doing right by it. It was just that we don't want to change. I like it this way and we're not changing, so screw you. That's always been a bad attitude in my estimation. Can hit me up on Twitter, DA on CBS. Again, DA on CBS. When we come back here on the show, we've got your best audio of the day as part of Soundcheck. And coming up, that will include Mike Trout discussing returning for this baseball season and Patrick Ewing discussing what it's going to look like for the NBA season and college basketball season, considering he was diagnosed with COVID-19 not long ago. That's all coming up here next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
Well, there were a lot of news stories to be stunned to a. Elon Musk, the gift that keeps on giving, though, he essentially broke his website over the weekend, DA, selling shorty shorts. Hot shorty shorts, the red shorts. They're being sold on the Tesla website for just under $70. I think it's like $69,420. Obviously, 420 has meaning. Musk has frequently used the idea of selling short shorts to tease his investors and short sellers who bet against his company. Tesla describing the red satin shorts as being ready, perfect for anyone, and this is totally me, wishing to, quote, run like the wind and entertain like Liberace. They are sold out in every size except XL, which you can only imagine if you've actually seen the shorts. They're real tight. They show some major cheekage, and they have the words sexy with obviously the letter E is a 3 emblazoned on the back in some gold. So XL is the only size that's available, and I'm not sure I want to see XL people in these shorts. But I actually think this would be a perfect purchase for Mraz, and I think we should get him a pair.
This feels like the perfect purchase, although they're really expensive, aren't they? How expensive are these Tesla shorty shorts?
They are. They're $69.42.
What is amazing is
that... expensive.
What is amazing is that he is clearly making a joke about the number 69 and 420, which he has oftentimes done, which is so bizarre because Elon Musk is this kind of like prodigy genius who's trying to change the world and seemingly has this brain power that's far above most mortals. And yet he gets a laugh like Gronk out of saying 69 and 420. Like somehow,
he's the same guy.
Yeah, exactly. Elon Musk is like trying to change space exploration, but also is Beavis and Butthead at the same time. It seems
bizarre.
He's like
69. 69. It's ridiculous.
Beavis. Elon Musk has 69 on his shorts.
I mean, if only I could be that rich and childish all rolled into one. It'd be amazing.
Yeah, I mean, really. So... Elon Musk is selling short shorts to promote Tesla? This seems like a really... It's a very loose connection here for Elon Musk, don't you think?
Well, I think he's... His whole thing is he's making a dig at short sellers, people that are betting against his company. So, like, guys that'll, you know, sell and then wait for the stock to go down and then rebuy. And so he's sort of just being a jerk about it, but... The idea that they sold out over the weekend and crashed his website is kind of hilarious.
Yeah, it's
hilarious.
Where
are people wearing these shorts to, by the way? Like, I would look awesome in these shorts, like, in quarantine where no one can see me for the last 4 months with my mask on. I mean, you could only imagine the kind of action I would get around my house if I was walking around in these shorts.
I could only imagine. Yeah, and you're the household that... Your husband actually once bought you a toilet bowl seat as a Mother's Day gift. So I could only imagine.
He did. And I'm so glad you brought that up again. Yeah.
I could only imagine.
We didn't talk for 2 weeks.
It was a two. Yeah, you had your own personal 2 week quarantine from talking to your husband after he bought you a toilet bowl seat.
I did. I was mad. You don't buy your wife a toilet seat for Mother's Day. That is just a PSA that I'm willing to share with the world.
And we need that PSA. Do you still have the toilet seat? And what's the after effects of this?
Okay, so the after effect has been the toilet seat went directly back to Home Depot, which, mind you, he was like, oh my God, Sunday's Mother's Day. I'm checking out at Home Depot. Let me just grab the toilet seat that was on the way out. So that's sort of how the impetus for that purchase. It ended up going back to the store immediately. I didn't talk to him for 2 weeks. And since then, I have literally picked out every single gift for every single holiday that has ever come up over the last few years. So I'm really enjoying all the things that I've been getting that I've been picking out. So
Does your husband recognize the error in his ways, or does
the
he still think
very low?
Or does he still think that was a great Mother's Day gift and you're wrong?
Oh no. He thinks, like, even just the "I'm buying a throne for my queen" comment, like, he thinks it is the greatest gift ever, and he regrets sending it back because he thinks that it was a heated toilet seat that squirted water up your hoo-ha, and he thought, this is the greatest thing ever. Why did I send this back?
Yeah, it was a smart, so, if I remember correctly.
And I purposely have not bought it for him for Father's Day. Or
yeah. If I remember correctly, it was a smart toilet seat where it was like it could be programmed from your phone,
I mean,
or
it
something.
It did do things.
It did more than a Tesla.
I don't even think it was that technically. Yeah, I don't. Exactly. It was like the Tesla of toilet seats. No, it really wasn't. I mean, you push a button and I think the seat got warm. But who has time to, like, wait for that to heat up? I'm a mom. Like, I have things to do. So I'm not waiting for the toilet seat to heat up to then go sit on it for an extended period of time. Like, that was never going to happen. You get in, you get out, nobody gets hurt in my situation.
But the whole thing makes me nauseous and mad and sad.
It is what
amazing.
It is.
Amazing. And I'd like to question the people that spent $70
nauseous, sad, and mad
on short shorts from Elon Musk. That is, those people are the ones that really should be questioned here. If he can make the $70, I guess good for him. The people that sold out
them.
Of short shorts, satin short shorts, like your Apollo Creed.
Yeah, I'm getting on a waiting list. My online shopping habits are out of control as of this pandemic, so I'm definitely getting on that. I'm going to get on a waiting list.
All right, thank you, Erica. We'll talk to you next hour for more headlines when we come back here on the show on a fine Monday morning. Is time running out on the NFL? One team executive says yes. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Big upside.
Sometimes all they have is batches of really fat storks. And sometimes you get what looks like a thin bundle of storks and there's a couple fat ones in there. Just like there's broccoli crowns and broccoli storks, there should be a section of the supermarket for fat asparagus and thin asparagus.
Mraz, are you calling a group of asparagus storks?
What would you call them?
Stalk.
Okay.
Yeah. Storks. They don't deliver babies.
All right, whatever.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Not whatever. It's a very important delineation right there. Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more.
Take a hike.
The DA Show every single morning, 6 until 10 Eastern Time, 3 until 7 Pacific. But you could also listen to it whenever you want. It's on demand. We've got a podcast cooking, which means that if you ever want to listen to the DA Show on your own time, you can listen to full episodes or the best of the show every single day. We have a condensed version of the show every single day. Just go to our podcast page and subscribe. You can rate and review it as well. We appreciate that. That helps other people find the podcast. But what you do is you go to your favorite podcast platform and just search the DA Show. Could be radio.com, could be Apple Podcasts. I use both of them. It could be Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever it is that you get your podcast. Just search The DA Show and subscribe and listen to us on demand. Now, the NFL has some significant decisions to make here, and one of them is how many preseason games do we do? We had the news that came over the weekend where the NFL was going to eliminate the first and fourth preseason games. They've already eliminated the Hall of Fame games. Uh-oh. And the fact that they've eliminated the Hall of Fame game and will be eliminating week one and week four of the preseason tells you that the NFL is already running into interference of having a quote-unquote normal season. Now, president and CEO of the Packers, Mark Murphy, has a weekly column on, actually a monthly column for the Packers website, Packers.com. And Mark Murphy had an interesting phrase in terms of dealing with these types of things. I want to read you this passage that he opened up his most recent letter to the fans at Packers.com with. Mark Murphy, quote, "With training camp set to start in less than a month and COVID-19 showing no signs of slowing down, the Packers will have to make several difficult decisions in the coming weeks. Since the pandemic arrived earlier this year, NFL teams have had the benefit of time. Unlike professional basketball, hockey, and baseball, who were either in the middle of their seasons or about to start, the draft and their entire offseason programs virtually, we've had to handle free agency, all of it online, the draft and our offseason programs. We've made decisions along the way, but the major ones we've been able to put off until we have more information. With so much uncertainty, it had made sense that we have not had to make decisions until we absolutely have to. As we near the start of training camp, though, rookies would start practice July 21st, veterans the 28th. Time is no longer on our side." Very interesting point there. "We announced this week that we would not hold training camp at our normal place for the first time in 63 years. And then continues to go on to sending a letter to all season ticket holders and what the league may determine about fans coming up here. But time is no longer on our side." Now, this goes back to what I was saying to start off this hour about Lincoln Riley and spring football. And that is that the NFL has made a series of smart decisions. Don't make a decision until you have to. It's just like playing field position. If you lead by 3 or you trail by 4 or whatever, you can keep playing field position until the final moment when then you have to go for it on 4th and 6. But until then, play field position, punt it away, just don't beat yourself. And that's what the NFL has done. And it has led them to a free agency season, led them to a draft, led them to an offseason where they haven't really been working out. Guys aren't allowed to their facilities, but the NFL has, quote, gone off as normal. But now you can't do that anymore. And when the CEO, Mark Murphy of the Packers, says that time is no longer on our side, it tells you that there's hard decisions to be made right now. And this is why, to me, to wrap it up and to dovetail back into the Lincoln Riley quote about spring football, spring college football, it makes sense to play in the spring if you're college, and you can. If you can, you should do it. Because every day you have more information, a better grasp on safety, a better grasp on the execution of logistics, letting other leagues do it first, helps you make a better, more informed decision. You don't make the same mistakes. As Mark said, NFL teams have had the benefit of time. We've made decisions along the way, but the major ones have been able to be put off until we have more information. With so much uncertainty, it's made sense that we don't make decisions until we absolutely have to. And what he's saying is, now we absolutely have to. You can't come to training camp. We're not doing it at our normal college. You're not going to be able to come to fan night. And this is what you're going to start seeing. And right now the NFLPA is suggesting that there's no preseason games and that the NFL just goes right to week number 1. The NFLPA has unveiled a recommendation to the league where there's not going to be the 2 preseason games that right now would be on the table. And instead has a breakdown of 21 days of strength and conditioning, 2 weeks of practice with pads, 10 days of unpadded practice. And then you start week 1 of the NFL season. There's 2 schools of thought here. Does it make more sense? Are your odds more likely to get a season played if you don't have a preseason? In other words, are you basically betting on guys getting it, having to be quarantined, and being removed from the equation? And if that's the case, do you prefer it to happen during training camp or the preseason? Are you just betting on, look, there's going to be positives? Every other league has had positives. We're no different. We're going to have positives. We'd rather have them in training camp. And we'd rather we start understanding what the game of football does in terms of contracting it. You know, you're in huddles. You're tackling one another. You're landing on one another. There's you know, all these types of pileups on the field. We want to know offensive linemen versus defensive linemen. Their hands are basically in each other's face. We want to know what that looks like. We want to know how that affects the league. We want to know how that affects contraction. So let's get that out of the way during the preseason. Let's start understanding that in the preseason. Do you come at it from that standpoint? Or do you come at it from the standpoint of, let's delay the inevitable as long as possible and not put our guys in harm's way more than they have to be? No games. No games that don't matter. Let's just only practice with one another, just our own teams, controlled environments, and then the only time we actually play against one another is when it matters. And I got to be honest, I think, as Mark Murphy says, we're running out of time to make these decisions, and the NFLPA says no preseason, I think it benefits both parties to do this. Now, for us fans and media, we don't care if there's preseason games anyway. We're not likely to be at these preseason games. So what does it really matter? And the games stink. We could only imagine how few stars would play in the preseason this year. I know that you would say, well, don't you need some practice before the regular season? But if you're sitting on Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson or Drew Brees or Aaron Rodgers, more than likely those guys don't even get into the preseason because they don't want to risk those guys contracting the virus, right, and losing them for the regular season, I would imagine. So I don't think there's much reason to play preseason games aside from it's going to be really clunky football when they finally do play, that we do need the preseason to streamline some of the football. But if really the bar is much lower than that and it's let's just get games played, that every game played needs to count towards something because we can't waste the games that are being played for some ridiculous exhibitions where 25% of the roster, you know, is the only one that play, then why bother? Then what you're doing is you're pushing out when you have to make decisions. And that's what Mark Murphy is talking about. And I think this makes sense. Again, the NFLPA is suggesting 3 weeks of strength and conditioning so that they would come to practice later on this month, come to training camp later on this month, and just work on strength and conditioning, right? Just make sure your body is up to speed. Make sure your body and just what you react to, how strong you feel, what your weight is at, that's strong and you're ready to go. Then you do 2 weeks of padded practice or a total of 14 days. It's not all in a row. But 14 days of just practice, 2 weeks of that, and then 10 days of unpadded practice in some way, shape, or form, that some schedule in there. And then you start week one of the 2020 season after Labor Day, so basically mid-September. Hey, what you're doing is, again, you're punting for another month to acquire more information. I think it makes sense. I think it's smart, and I think it's likely to be done. I think that's likely where we're headed. Coaches aren't going to love it because they don't have a preseason game to rely on. They don't have preseason film to be able to chop up. But if the hope is, look, we just got to make sure we play as many games as humanly possible, and we're trying also to fulfill the contractual obligations of our television partners, starting week one makes the most sense because we don't know what football looks like in the middle of all of this. And Is it going to look sloppy at the beginning? Yeah, it's going to look like preseason games. But stars will play. Full rosters will play. The games matter towards your playoff standings. There's likely to be no fans there for the time being, or very limited fans. But if the games are being played and they count in the standings, that's really all that matters for the NFL. So you push this off for as long as you possibly can, and then you say, we bought ourselves 6 weeks. We could have reported at the end of July and started getting ready for preseason games, but we've reported, we're practicing, we're quarantining, what have you, we're dealing with whoever has it positive here, but we're not playing football until mid-September when we can make even more informed decisions. I think that makes sense. I really do. We continue here on the DA Show when we come back with a push to change Washington's football name next. I want to begin in college football this hour because Lincoln Riley had some really interesting comments. The head coach of Oklahoma was asked about the reality of playing college football this fall. And to me, out of all of the sports that have all of these question marks surrounding them, college football has the most. The NBA is going to try to come back here in the bubble of Orlando. MLS, the same exact thing, bubble in Orlando. The NHL will have two hub cities, Edmonton and Toronto, when it comes back for its Stanley Cup playoffs. And baseball is going to try to play in its own home cities, but a shortened season, 60 games. Out of all of these leagues, what they want to do, this is what they ultimately want to do. They want to come back, play their games, get through the playoffs, crown a champion, and then run away. That's essentially what they're hoping to do. All of these leagues need to play games for television inventory purposes. Part of the want by these leagues to play, despite how much money it's going to cost to test and to house and to pull off all of these logistics, part of the reason is these leagues worry, if we go away for a calendar year, do we lose market share? And that's understandable. I mean, we talked a lot about that with baseball battling one another over percentage points and dollar points over 60 games, 80 games, 40 games, what have you. Yes, if baseball went away or the NBA didn't play this year or hockey or MLS, yes, if it went away for a calendar year, you worry about losing market share, being pushed out of sight, out of mind, something else taking over for you and people just kind of moving on. But primarily, it's beyond that. It's much less vague than that. These leagues want to simply play games. Forget fans. They just want to play games for television inventory purposes. Because if they can fulfill that, they make a lot of their annual revenue. Now, the way the television contracts work is networks, take this network, CBS, pays for the rights to broadcast the NFL. We will pay you, NFL, for the rights to have your inventory on our airwaves because that drives eyeballs, it commands ratings, and we can then sell advertising in and around that. So let's just say for a commonality, an easy math equation, that CBS pays $1 billion a year for the NFL. I don't know what the number is exactly, but let's just say. Their math is that they will recoup more than $1 billion in advertising around that deal. That they will sponsor the NFL Today. They will sponsor pre- and post-game coverage. They will have all of the commercials inside of the games. They will have advertisements, the reads, the live reads inside games. They will have advertising during promos coming back and out of break, and this is brought to you by this, and this is brought to you by that. Their math is we will make up what we have invested in these leagues. And the leagues take the paycheck and say, great, this is how we pay our players. We take the TV money from CBS, and now we pay our players and pay ourselves and pay our staff, et cetera, and we all get rich. Well, without the games, the networks don't pay the money to the league. The league needs to guarantee the TV inventory. It's not like if there's no games being played, CBS still pays $1 billion. They don't have to pay. So these leagues essentially are walking right up to the ledge and saying, what's the risk that we have to endure? What's the liability we have to endure just to make sure these games are played? This is a long way of coming back around to college basketball, college football, rather. The NBA has a union. The NHL has a union. Major League Baseball has a union. The NFL has a union. And so they're all negotiating the safety precautions and liabilities with their players through organized labor negotiations and contracts. Football didn't have that. College football didn't have that. They've got this very kind of obtuse network of free labor that are also students, and there's no negotiation happening. Now, what liabilities do they leave themselves open to? These leagues, these conferences need the TV inventory. They need to get that TV check because football, college football, paved the way for so many other sports. In fact, college football pays for other things in the academic wings of their colleges. I'm sure that Alabama football helps fund something in one of the other academic departments. Perhaps it pays for some professors or labs or some type of student resources. I mean, when you make hundreds of millions of dollars or tens of millions of dollars, you are asked to make sure also some of that goes to rowing and some of that goes to women's soccer and some of that goes to archery and some of that goes to the biology department and some of that goes to this new lab. And, you know, there's a lot that comes with these college football seasons. And college football is the most dangerous what if here because they're being asked to play when there's still a million unknowns before basketball and baseball and hockey and soccer can return on these shores. Before they can return, college football is being asked, hey, you got to make a decision here soon. Now, college football will have the benefit of having all of these other leagues in play when they ultimately have to make a decision going into Labor Day weekend. But they're right now on the clock. And one of the suggestions that I've really liked from a fan, but also as a logistics, from a logistics standpoint, is the potential of moving college football to the spring semester. Because right now you have colleges talking about, okay, let's get kids in Labor Day weekend, but let's get them out by Thanksgiving. And they are home for the holidays up until maybe March. That's what some colleges are talking about these days. We'll get the kids in, 3-month semester in the fall, done by Thanksgiving, done for the day. Everybody go home and we'll ride out the winter when there could be flu season coming back, etc., up until the spring. Could you push college football to the spring? I mean, remember, it's played in the fall because it's a fall sport, fall semester, but everything has to work within the semesters. You know, college basketball's NCAA tournament has to work within the second spring semester. They can't just have the NCAA tournament played in June or July every year. So could you move college football to just making it a spring sport? Just like baseball is, just like softball is, just like, you know, there's just spring sports and there's fall sports and there's winter sports in college. Here is Lincoln Riley, head coach of the Oklahoma Sooners, on this very question.
Do you think it's doable? And I personally do. I'm one of the, there's differing opinions on that. I don't believe you could play a full season. It'd probably be a conference season, postseason only, but you know, we've seen often teams go in and play well into January in the college football playoff and then start spring practice at some point in February and nobody says a word about it. So this, I do believe you gotta adjust your schedule in the season. You'd have to adjust your schedule to give players, you know, plenty of time off to get their bodies back, all of that during, you know, summer, maybe even to have a little bit later start date the next fall. But I think the people who say it's not doable are in my opinion, just don't want to think about it. And I just think we have to have, I just think it would be, wrong of us to take any potential option off the table right now. And I think it would be very difficult to say that the spring's not a potential option. And I for one, believe it's very doable.
Smart. Smart talk by Lincoln Riley. Smart guy. What he said there is really important. It doesn't make sense to take any option off the table right now. And spring college football doesn't feel right. It's not traditional. It's atypical. We are used to having our college football in the fall when the leaves are changing and the weather gets colder as the season goes on, and you wrap up with a bowl season around the holidays, and right after New Year's, you have the college football playoff. That's what we're used to. That's what people like. That's what people are comfortable with. But the last 4 months have taught us to be uncomfortable and to realize discomfort comes with every single day. And Lincoln Riley's really smart here. Let's not take anything off the table. Let's not just automatically say we can't do this, because if it's the best solution, you got to find a way to do it. And I think it might be the best solution. That you're essentially punting and playing some defense for as long as you can. And I think that's smart. Look, if you think about it, college football, for financial purposes for these schools, needs to be played. Not for the betterment of us, not for the betterment of the student athletes, that's for sure. If this was not about making revenue, if this was not about making money, if this was a non-for-profit, which unfortunately for some of these schools they actually are, fortunately for them, but unfortunately for the reality, you would just say it doesn't make any sense to have unpaid student labor right now, put themselves at more risk by playing contact sports. It just doesn't make any sense. You know what? We just don't play this year. Unfortunately, that's just not a feasible option for a lot of these schools or conferences to not get that paycheck from television. You could have no fans in the stands. That would hurt. But what would really hurt is not having the Big Ten Network give you any change, not having ESPN or Fox or CBS give you a check. That's what would really, really hurt. And maybe the most feasible option is, look, you're playing within this window of a school year. The school year goes from September or August to April and May. We just have to find a way to play within this. That's the window. What's the best timeline to do it? And would it be weird to be playing Michigan, Ohio State in May? Yeah, it would be super weird. But if that's the best solution, then you need to inquire and look at it, because it very may well be. If you're punting on the fall, and you're saying, you know what, let's start football in late February. Let's go for 2.5 months. And in mid-May, we crown a champion. It's bizarre, but it also has now bought you time. It has bought you time and the benefit of learning from other leagues. For college football, they'd be learning simultaneously with the NFL, who has their own series of questions here. If you wait until the spring, you are allowing everything else to unfold, and with more information and more time, you get to make better decisions. The decision that college football can make in March is just going to be a better decision than they can make in August. In August of 2020, it's going to be a worse decision than you can make in April of 2021. It's just the way that it's going to go here. Just like we can make a better decision today than we could have in February. College football's best option is exactly that. It's a spring football. And it might suck because you might be used to watching, you know, LSU football in October. And the rest of us are used to willing and used to watching college football during our fall months. But if you have the benefit of time and of research and pushing it out as far as you can financially, to where maybe there's a vaccine, or maybe there is at least better treatment, or maybe some things are under control. You learn other things that are right and work and are better. You know, it's just valuable information. And I've always felt like college football could really explode if you put it apart from the NFL. If you didn't have the college football world battling on Saturdays, well, Monday through Friday, at least, for what happens with the NFL. I mean, by the time Sunday at noon rolls around in most places, it's on to the NFL. Whatever happened in college does not even matter anymore. We're on to the NFL, and the entire week is dominated by NFL talk. If college football was moved to the spring, apart from the NFL, it would own the landscape, considering just how dominant football is in our culture. I think it could be a boon to college football to move outside of the fall so that it's not swallowed up by the NFL. So Lincoln Riley's right. Don't shut it off as an option, and it might be the best option. And if it is the best option, don't be scared to do it. It'll be weird. It'll be awkward. But if it's the best option to get college football played, where so many schools absolutely are in dire need to have it played for their own institution, then keep that door open. It could be the best solution. Probably is the best solution. 855-212-4227. 855-212-4CBS on the phones or on Twitter. DA on CBS. Follow me and tweet at me there. Maybe your thoughts on some spring college football. DA on CBS. Hit me up. When we come back, we are stunned to a news. The DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Analytics is just a term that's kind of thrown around a lot.
It's time now for the mothership's advanced analytics.
Joey Chestnut ate 75 hot dogs on Saturday to win yet again the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Competition. 75, okay? The next highest total was Darren Breeden at 42. Joey Chestnut nearly doubled his next competitor. He ate 33 more hot dogs than number two, which means there's got to be a handicap. That's our poll question on the day. Does Joey Chestnut need a hot dog handicap to make things more exciting? On Twitter, 53% of you said no. On Facebook, 59% of you said no. Is this interesting to you guys? I mean, Chestnut just dominates, thrashes everybody, has done so for a decade plus, and is now 33 hot dogs better than number two. I mean, maybe I'm just embittered because of how he has treated us on this show, but I think there's got to be a hot dog handicap here. Facts. According to the National Hot Dog and Sausage Council, yes, that's a thing. Americans eat 150 million hot dogs on the 4th of July. Chestnut also holds the record in, of course, mutton sandwiches. Eating 81 4-ounce mutton sandos in 10 minutes, May of 2018.
Oh, God.
Exactly. The man is a monster. Get a handicap in here for him. He must be taken down. 81 mutton sandwiches. Ever see this video of him eating like 100 Big Macs on YouTube? I watched it once. It's disgusting. Gross. Guy is sweating. Disgusting. Meat sweats by like the 26th Big Mac.
Crunching and munching.
It's gross. All right, that's your advanced analytics. Tomorrow on the show, I'm super excited because on Thursday night, I listened to something that I thought was as special, as unique, as anything I had ever heard on sports talk radio. On Thursday night, my man Little Mo had an entire sports radio show dedicated to him that was hosted from his bedroom. Jeremy Kahn, who hosts the evening show on 105.7 in Baltimore, our CBS Sports Radio affiliate there, has become a family friend, a close family friend of Mo. And you guys know how dearly I hold Mo close to me and how much he means to me and how proud of him I am and how much he inspires me and is my hero. Well, Jeremy wanted to celebrate Little Mo, and since Mo has always wanted to be a sports talk host, brought the setup to Mo's bedroom. And Mo, for 4.5 hours, hosted a radio show that was stuffed wall to wall with people telling Mo how much he means to them. Complete strangers. It was extraordinary. And 105.7 deserves so much credit for going out of their way to do this. Jeremy Kahn deserves so much credit for being just an amazing human being amongst all this. And the callers in Baltimore, all night long, they went on the air at 6. They finally signed off at 10:30 because finally Mo's mom was like, I think he's got to get to bed. Non-stop calls and messages from the city of Baltimore for Mo Gabba. It was so awe-inspiring. Add on top of this that Mo got calls from John Harbaugh, Buck Showalter, WWE star Roman Reigns, multiple professional athletes, and Ray Lewis. It was such an amazing night of radio. And I'm going to play clips of it tomorrow on the show because I just think it was so extraordinary and something I've never heard before. You know, I've never heard sports radio have this type of drumbeat of positivity, of warmth, and of gratitude, unless it was like a team wins a championship and everybody's just delirious with happiness. But that's about a sports team. This is a young 14-year-old boy who has spent probably 3/4 of his life in hospitals, battling cancer now for the 4th time. A young man that was blinded by this very early on when they found a growth on his retina, and has never once stopped being outwardly amazingly positive. And it has touched so many people. And he's such a great sports fan and such a vocal, passionate sports fan for the Orioles, for the Ravens, that the city of Baltimore absolutely adores him, as so many of us do as well here on the DA show, since he was a caller from many years ago. And it was just one of the most amazing things I've ever heard on Thursday night. It was just absolutely astoundingly amazing. So I'm going to play some of that for you tomorrow on the show, and I think you're really going to get a kick out of it. Mo is just changing the world. He's amazing. Let's get to your epic fail of the morning, boys and girls. And we go back in time to 2 years ago where we debated why Kirk Cousins was cooking up mutton on his grill or something that looks like that. I mean, it just looks absolutely disgusting. So what is Kirk Cousins actually grilling? And of course, it's Kirk Cousins. Here is your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
It's amazing because this is the most Kirk Cousins moment ever. This is 2 years ago, 4th of July weekend. He takes a picture of a lake that he is vacationing on.
I am so happy!
And there is this deck chair that is looking over the lake. Beautiful, serene lake. Beautiful, sunny day. And then his grill. And so this is just the most Kirk Cousins thing ever.
You like that?
Kirk Cousins is like, oh, yeah, great day. Got this grill cooking. People are going to love this. What a shot. The deck, the sun, the water, the grill. And he's got the grill top open. And there are 8 chunks, light tan drab slabs of something that barely look at him.
You maybe get order of big clams.
And of course, in Cousins' mind, he's like, oh, these steaks are awesome.
You like that?
And the rest of us are like, those look disgusting.
It's going to explode in your mouth.
Those look like they are made with leather. Those look plastic or polyurethane. They look awful, Kirk. And Kirk Cousins is like, oh, we are killing it today. These steaks are awesome.
Everything we have is top of the line.
They're the bomb.com.
You suck the meat right off the bone.
And we're all like, ew, what are you cooking?
Excuse me.
I actually think maybe they are vegan or vegetarian fake meat. because they just don't look like real meat. And we've never found out from Kirk what exactly he was cooking there, but they do not look like real meat.
We got meatless balls!
It's like, imagine a Lego movie cooked steak. That's what this steak looks like. If the Lego Batman cooked steak, that's what it's just, it looks plastic. It looks disgusting. And Kirk Cousins, he's like, this is awesome. Got the best steaks ever.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
It's time to answer our Ask the Pros question of the day, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly for all of your car care needs. Guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly. Better parts, better prices every day. Miguel in San Antonio asks, DA, do you think there's any way that Pop, my man, takes a job with the Nets? I don't see it, but could you see it happening? I can't. This question comes up because there's been some scuttlebutt around the NBA that Sean Marks, who is the GM of the Brooklyn Nets, and of course they fired Kenny Atkinson right before pandemic hit, would give a king's ransom offer to Pop to leave the Spurs and to join the Nets. And Gerald Brown of SiriusXM NBA Radio said that the Nets are preparing a, quote, godfather offer to get Pop. But Sean Marks has also kind of backed away from saying that they're going to do that. And he's been respectful. He was just on WFAN in New York the other day and said that he's going to be coaching the Spurs. He wants to stay there and he's happy there. Now, could Sean Marks give a massive offer to Pop in the offseason? Sure could. But I don't see that happening. I don't see Greg Popovich, who has flirted with retirement already, at the very tail end, leaving to go restart and do this somewhere else. I don't see him wanting to dive back into a new endeavor, like coaching a different team, if he's only planning on doing it for a year or two. You know, if Greg Popovich had some type of inclination to coach another 10 years or even 5 years and said, you know what, at this point in my career, I'm looking for something new to be energized, coaching Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving. That sounds like a lot of excitement, a lot of fun. I work for Sean Marks, who I know really well. I'd have a godfather offer. I'd make all of this money, have all of this control, yada, yada, yada. I'd be in the number one New York market. If that was enticing to Pop, I think it would have had to happen a couple of years ago. I don't think he's at a point in his career, doesn't feel this to me, where he's kicking the tires on trying something new. You know, I think Pop is already toward the end of his coaching career and might go into the front office or something, you know, higher than your everyday coaching. Maybe a little bit more detached, a little less pressurized. But I don't think that we're suddenly going to see Greg Popovich jump into a different job to do all the same old stuff that he's been doing coaching with the Spurs. That'll do it for us this morning here on the show. Hey, thanks to executive producer Connor Green this morning, also on the Wheels of Steel. Thanks to Billy Jagalo, associate producer today. Thanks to Erica Herskowitz on your headlines, and Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA. We're at it tomorrow on a Trash Tuesday. Be good and be good to one another. The Mothership disconnects.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.